We are now ready to hear 11-1609 Singh v. Holder. Mr. Sareen.
Good morning, Your Honors. If it pleases the court, on behalf of Mr. Singh, Gurish Sareen. The objective documentation, regardless of any testimony, clearly and unequivocally demonstrates torture and my client's eligibility for CAT relief. In fact, it compels it. The immigration judge, the Board of Immigration Appeal, never once read the country reports or the State Department report on the acts of policemen or police officers in India. They have unlimited powers to torture, kill, rape, detain. My client testified to each and every one of those facts except being killed. He was taken into a police office or a police station by police officers as public officials in a public institution and with a bat beaten till both of his arms were smashed. There was no analysis on any of these facts. That in itself compels any reasonable adjudicator to send it back and ask why not. The question before this court also is, the immigration judge and the Board of Immigration Appeals refused to even look at the X-ray objective report from a doctor, from Dr. John Hopkins, which states clearly that my client had no bones in his arms and they have metal rods and the scars that clearly indicate the injuries as alleged by him. He should have been granted CAT relief. The second issue before this court is the judge's adverse credibility findings. In this fact sequence, the immigration judge did not show any inconsistent demeanor, did not show any material or alleged material inconsistency.
Could I just ask, because it wasn't entirely clear to me, and the IJ noticed this as well. The IJ noted that Mr. Singh was unable to provide a coherent explanation of the political views for which he fears persecution. And I had the same difficulty understanding what Mr. Singh believes is the basis on which he would be persecuted. It does not appear to me from the record that he holds any particular political views.
And you don't need that to show CAT relief, Your Honor.
But you do have to show a basis, and I'm trying to understand the basis on which he fears persecution.
He has to show a basis for the police action against him for CAT relief? I disagree. My understanding of CAT relief is, as a public official, and if he's going to be sent back, will he be tortured? He was tortured. He doesn't have to show anything. He doesn't have to show.
Let's say, we'll just assume for purposes of argument that what's recited in the record happened to him. The police beat him up with a baseball bat. But let's say that happened because he was trying to go out with the girlfriend of one of the police officers. Is that going to be sufficient to get him CAT relief?
Yes. They need to charge him. Any civilized society has to have an arrest warrant. There has to be a court of law. And if his sentence is you're going to be beaten to death with a bat relief, then you have to judge it based on that civilization, if that is correct. The United Nations, in its Human Rights Declaration, does not tolerate any kind of torture. That's torture. Why they tortured is irrelevant, immaterial. The question before you is, can a person whose arms are broken by police officers in a police institution, does that constitute CAT? And it does.
Mr. Sareen?
Yes.
You're correct that under CAT you don't have to show persecution based on a ground, but you still have to show a basis of past persecution on which to base the presumption. You're saying that you've shown through the facts that you're presenting a history of past persecution, and so we presume persecution in the future?
I didn't mention any word of persecution, Your Honor. I've never even mentioned the word past persecution. I've stated that the objective documentation in the record, which wasn't analyzed by anybody in authority, either the immigration judge or the Board of Immigration Appeals, the United States Department of State, which is required under the Real ID Act to be read, states unequivocally that the Indian police are accountable to no one and torture so they can make money because they enjoy it or for any other reason they feel to. That is the issue before you. We haven't made any allegation of past persecution. He clearly is eligible for CAT relief. Insofar as the question that you're raising with me is what is his political opinion, I believe there is an issue with that, and I agree with the court. He did not define, and that comes under his withholding claim, and the court is correct, under his withholding claim, he has to have a political opinion. We are stating it was a mixed motive political opinion. The police both had a motive to make money out of him, as well as to find him susceptible based on his father's background, as well as his opposition to the Congress Party. This event transpired when the Congress Party in Punjab, and still in India right now, is the controlling party. They came to his residence in 2005 primarily to get him and his parents to support the political party of the Congress Party. He opposed them. He stated he stood and supported the Akali Dal Badal group. And his political opposition was he wasn't going to give him money. And that's why he was targeted insofar as his claim for political opinion. It isn't well defined. He isn't a member of any group. He just supported his father and helped his father, who is a member of the Akali Dal Badal, but then quit. The other question that this court should really deal with.
The record showed that the other party, I can't pronounce the name.
Akali Dal Badal.
That they had, at least in that province, succeeded the Congress Party.
Once my client fled, that is correct. In 2007, they came into power. And then they used the same police to break his father's legs. That is correct.
Okay.
May I proceed forward?
Please.
Thank you. The issue before this court over here is, what was the inconsistency that the immigration judge and the Board of Immigration Appeals is saying this young man had? He states he was implausible. No examples. He states he was inconsistent. No examples. Now, do you speculate? Do you guess? Do you go through the record as counsel for the government has and states these are the reasons? The judge never ever gave one reason. He did not give one reason in the record as to what inconsistent statements my client said. My client may have been incoherent. There's a reason for that. There's an issue of the competency of the interpreter. The interpreter placed her competency before the court by stating she wasn't a member of his religion. What has somebody's religion got to do with interpreting? Why is the interpreter's religion have any relevancy whether she's fluent in the Punjabi language or the English language? When she was given an opportunity to respond to that, she never said she was certified. She said she understood Punjabi. She never said she was sworn and she could testify. There were words that she gave which were garbled, made no sense. And I believe the immigration judge took that translation to make the finding against my client for the adverse credibility. May I keep the rest of my time for rebuttal?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Corliss?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Lindsay Corliss, and I'm here for the respondent, the Attorney General. Now, there are two main issues in this case. We have the due process issue, and we have the adverse credibility finding. Now, unless Your Honors prefer otherwise, I was going to begin with the adverse credibility finding.
Well, I thought the petitioner raised three issues, and frankly focused on primarily on this issue of the torture question and whether or not there was sufficient evidence in the record to support a finding independent of any political opinion or otherwise, which didn't seem to me to be the focus of the briefs. But
it wasn't the focus in the brief, but I'm happy to discuss it
Well, why don't you start
first
with that?
Okay. It seems like there was a little bit of an issue about whether or not in cat protection there needs to be a nexus between the harm and a protected group. And I just wanted to confirm that petitioner is correct, that there isn't a requirement that there needs to be a nexus. However, the problem with this particular individual's cat claim is that cat protection doesn't actually have a presumption involved. So if you prove past torture, there's no presumption of future torture. What would be required of him would be to show an individualized risk.
That it is more likely than not that he will be tortured.
Yes. Right. And that...
Should he return?
And now this immigration judge found that he hadn't satisfied his burden of proving that he would even be persecuted at that probability in the future. So even if we were to take out for the, excuse me, this petitioner is relying on the exact same facts and the exact same story that he told below regarding his withholding claim to prove his cat claim. Now, he hasn't shown that in the future he will be again arrested on the basis of any basis at all and would be tortured and imprisoned again. He states his claim is a little bit amorphous because he doesn't provide for the immigration judge any particular belief that he holds that anyone might arrest him for in the future. So,
I think this was sort of the basis of my question, he doesn't have to show a basis under CAT for torture.
No, he does not.
But it's hard to explain why it is more likely than not that you will be tortured in the future. It would be useful to know why you were tortured in the past.
Precisely, Your Honor. That goes to the individualized risk that this person will face. He needs to show that he's not just anyone in India who faces risks in their own country. He needs to show that is more likely than not that he, as a particular individual living in India, will be tortured, will be first arrested, and then tortured.
Well, and in response to that, I understood the petitioner to say that the police forces in India are they're just rampant corruption. You ought to presume that because of that, anyone is potentially subject to being tortured and harmed.
Unfortunately, that's not the standard, though. The board actually addresses...
Well, it would make anyone in India able to mount a cat claim.
They could make a cat claim, but
no,
they're not going
I'm
to win.
I'm suggesting that it's difficult to the risk has to be individualized.
Right, and it has to be at more than 50%. The board actually does refer to the corruption in India and it acknowledges it. However, this particular person needs to show that he's going to face a 50% or greater chance of being tortured in prison, and since he hasn't identified any reason for which he believes that he'll be arrested in the future, and he hasn't presented any evidence that he will be arrested in the future, then he doesn't satisfy the standard for cat protection.
Could you speak to the issue of the interpreter and the
yes.
alleged translational errors?
Yes. Mr. Singh was provided with due process, and he was provided with a competent interpreter. The immigration judge states on the record that this interpreter had been previously sworn and instructed. Mr. Singh was instructed on the record to inform the court if he had any difficulty understanding his interpreter. In the briefs, there's a statement made by petitioner's counsel that at some point during the proceedings that the interpreter stated that she wasn't fluent in Punjabi. That's simply not the case. The record is very clear. They capitalize the person who's speaking and then the person who the speaker is directing his speech to.
You're referring to page 108 in the appendix?
I believe so, or it's 124 in the full administrative record. And you can see on there that it says immigration judge to Mr. McGuire. Mr. McGuire was Mr. Singh's counsel in immigration court. And so you can see then that the immigration judge states or asks the question or makes the statement, this is why I prefer to do that, prefer attorneys to do this counsel. And then counsel responds, yes, but I'm not fluent in Punjabi. And if there's any question further, you can see that the next line under that is the interpreter to the immigration judge. And she says, I speak and understand Punjabi, but I don't know how the names are spelled because they can be spelled differently. I also, just while I'm mentioning spellings, I think that that's a very important point. It came up earlier in Petitioner's Counsel's argument about what role this interpreter's religion played in her interpretation. The interpreter was actually stating that she doesn't have the same religion as the petitioner during the spelling section. And there's a difference between being able to interpret a language and knowing how individuals spell their names if they're religious names. That's why that was relevant, and that's also why it didn't concern the judge about her competency, because it's true that for, you know, regular translation, you don't have to be the same religion, but if somebody has names that someone in your community doesn't have, you might not recognize spellings.
Do you have any concerns at all about the translator's efforts in this case? I mean, there were a number of stops and starts, indiscernible parts of the record. Although I recognize the immigration judge did a pretty good job, I thought, of making sure that the record was complete, but there were some problems here.
There are some indiscernibles, certainly. Quality of the transcript, that hasn't been an issue that was exhausted before the board. The board was never asked to address any sort of problems with the transcript, if there were any problems with the transcript. It doesn't appear, when in the portions that were exhausted and that were presented to the board, in fact, there were legitimate reasons why portions of the testimony would have been untranslated, such as two people were talking at once, and then the question had to be redirected, and the answer was then brought out. There are a couple of times where the petitioner actually spoke in English, and when you're using an interpreter, they prefer you to speak just in your native language and have the interpreter speak. So then the immigration judge then directed him to speak only through the interpreter. So there are reasons why a lot of the things that aren't translated aren't translated. However, if you're going to be making a due process claim, it's not even enough to identify errors in the record. You have to identify how those errors actually prejudice the outcome of your case. And in this case, if these errors would not have cleared up the implausibilities or satisfied the immigration judge's corroboration concerns, then they're simply not probative of the issues that decided the outcome of this case. So, I'm sorry.
Okay. I was going to ask you to turn your attention to the petitioner's third argument about adverse credibility determinations. Okay. And what evidence he says there's no evidence in the record to support the IJ's adverse credibility determinations. It was simply speculation on his part. Where in the record, what would you point to in the record to rebut that?
I would direct your honors to look at the portion of the record where Mr. Singh is being asked to explain the inherent plausibility in his story, the implausibility being that he states that police officers came to his house in order to arrest his father. However, when he was arrested, his father was able to appear in the police station and was not arrested himself. And when the immigration judge first got that statement from the petitioner...
His rebuttal to that, I would assume, is that he wasn't arrested because he brought a pile of money with him.
That is a statement by counsel that was never presented before the immigration judge. Particularly, that doesn't necessarily make sense. It doesn't prove that he's credible, because if all these policemen were after were this individual's money, then there's no nexus to a protected ground to prove withholding of removal. So if these individuals were truly only going after his family because they wanted their money, that's criminal behavior, and it's not a grounds for withholding of removal. Is that sufficient answer to your question? May I return to the...
I think you can assume that if it's not, we'll ask again.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. So the immigration judge directly asks him again, can you confirm what happened? And so he states again, yes, that these individuals came to his house to arrest him. Then the immigration judge specifically asks the question of petitioner, do you know why your father wasn't arrested when he went to the police station when they wanted to arrest him before? And at that point, he describes the bribe, which does not necessarily answer the immigration judge's question because it doesn't respond to the fact that these individuals wanted to arrest him. So there was no response there. And then petitioner was again put on notice that the immigration judge was finding this individual to be not, the story to not be plausible when the immigration judge specifically states to him, I'm not sure in my own mind what exactly happened here. Can you tell me again why you were arrested? And again, the petitioner doesn't say anything about these individuals trying to get money out of his family. He states he was arrested because he supported his father's view. So that's an implausibility that's clear on the record. And the Real ID Act does specifically state that the inherent plausibility of an applicant's story is a basis on which the immigration judge and the board can rely upon when making an adverse credibility finding.
It doesn't have to go to the heart of the case.
It does not, not after the Real ID Act. The immigration judge and the board also based this decision on their corroboration concerns. Post-Real ID Act, an immigration judge may require more corroboration even if the applicant testifies consistently. However, when there are flaws in an applicant's testimony, such as here where we have implausibilities, then the need for corroborative evidence is even greater. And there are aspects of this petitioner's story that actually had no corroboration whatsoever, including all the evidence. One of those specific examples that's pointed out by the immigration judge is that he provides no corroboration for his account that while he was in Delhi, police officers went to his father's house and asked for the names and addresses of all of his relatives living in India and then searched for him throughout India. There's no corroboration even in his own father's statement to the court that event actually happened. And that is a sufficient basis on which the board could find that this applicant was not credible and did not meet his burden of proof. Unless your honors have any other questions, then we will rest.
Thank you very
All right,
much.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Sarin, you have some time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. I'd like to respond on each and every issue counsel raised. Number one, she didn't give any reasons for the reason for an adverse credibility finding except to state the judge categorized my client's rendition of facts as implausible.
On page 9 of the IJ's opinion, he has several paragraphs explaining why he did not find Mr. Singh to be credible. His testimony was not detailed or persuasive. His claims were not plausible. He repeatedly failed to answer the questions that were asked of him. Moreover, the documentary evidence he has submitted is not enough to overcome the concerns with respondents' credibility. And he goes on to explain the deficiencies in the documentary evidence and why that supports the credibility determination.
And he doesn't cite one example. Let's go to the last part.
Well, he does in the paragraph
I wanted to just go to the last part that you raised and counsel raised. He gave affidavits. He gave affidavits of everything. The judge didn't consider them. The only affidavit he didn't give was of a family member who he stayed with in Delhi. Now, what difference would it have made? He's given an affidavit of his arrest. He's given the affidavit of his father. He's given the affidavit of the doctor. He's given the affidavit of the party member. Now, going back to the original claim that counsel addressed, there was a monetary incentive over here. The police use their official badge, their official position as police officers because they had a persecutory animus to make money. They used it. It states clearly they singled him out because they knew this family had money. These were rich farmers. His father paid 100,000 rupees to get him released. That is undisputed. It's undisputed in the record that the United States Department of State states the Indian police tortures to make and extort money. that is the present reason why he cannot return to India, and that hasn't been addressed. The judge never once addressed the State Department report, and the issue that you asked and hasn't been addressed is he will be, once he's sent back, he'll be retargeted for the same reason he was targeted before, and that is the police know he's susceptible for official bribery. That goes to the CAT claim. Now, getting back to the interpreter claim, that is correct, but the issue on page 124 is the Punjabi interpreter, when asked, do you speak Punjabi fluently, says, I can understand Punjabi and speak Punjabi. That is not an affirmation that she's certified to speak fluently. And I can't tell you what mistake she made in the record because there's no bilingual transcript. I don't have the Punjabi transcript. I can't pinpoint words before this court. So these are all added together. The issue before this court is a very simple one. My client's arms were broken. They were broken by the Indian police. That is indisputable. Those facts are staring at all of us over here. Why won't the police again target him? And that hasn't been addressed by anyone. And I'm addressing that, and I'm stating unequivocally he is eligible for CAT relief, and he will be harmed if he goes back. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will come down, greet counsel, and take a brief recess.